Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
Hey, everybody, it's Friday. And you know what Friday means? It means it's the day of our show. I wanted to talk about some things that are going on. I was just speaking with one of our fosters for Merlin's Kids, who's been wonderful. Those of you who know Merlin's Kids, we train shelter dogs and turn them into service dogs. And not every shelter dog can certainly be a service dog. About 1 in 100 can be. But what's interesting is she had a situation that her son wanted to adopt a dog from a local shelter. So you say, oh, that's great. And it was a puppy. The puppy was only 11 weeks old, and they wouldn't let them have it until the dog was neutered. Now, it's a large breed, a Rottweiler, a large breed dog. And, you know, we definitely don't want people breeding or allowing dogs who are certainly a mixed breed or not perfectly bred show dogs with great temperaments and great longevity and health and all. But there is a lot of discussion lately among the veterinary community, finally, where we're starting to see that, hey, you know, maybe it's not a great idea to be neutering 5 and 6 and 8 week old puppies. Because remember, there are hormones in those dogs, estrogen or testosterone, and especially with the males, when you take that testosterone out, yeah, you can take out potential behavioral issues. Well, let's see if that works. Neuter your bad dog and see if he's perfect. But the hormones are there, not for reproduction with the dog who's not even, you know, a grown-up. What the problem is those hormones help and aid in the development of bone, muscle, tendons and ligaments, cartilage, eyesight, heart, lungs, and immunity. So when we take a dog and suddenly, you know, it's 5, 6 weeks old or 8 weeks old or 11 weeks old, and we neuter it or spay it too young, and by the way, neuter is for a male, spay is for a female, and alter, the word alter is the word that you can say just for removing the gonads or the ovaries. So that's just a generic term. So if you do that, what happens? What kind of problems can you have? Well, listen, I'm a rescuer at heart, and certainly I don't want to have a bunch of dogs, you know, procreating. But when you get a dog, and actually New York City has a law that dogs have to be spayed or neutered, in other words, dogs have to be altered, before they are sold or transferred. So that's creating a big problem. Now, if it's a year-old dog, it's not a big deal. But when it's a puppy, man, we're creating so many issues. The veterinary community for years and years has been saying, hey, we've got to wait till they're 6 months old. But, you know, we're finding that 6 months is not really enough time to be able to, you know, have the dogs really, you know, being, you know, socially and physically ready. And the problem is that you can't get that back. So why are we spaying and neutering so early? Because a lot of people are just irresponsible. And a lot of the rescues and shelters feel that if somebody doesn't want to spay or neuter the dog now, that they'll never want to. But we have to look at what is the best interest, what's in the best interest of the dog. So if we were able to have a contract with somebody and say, hey, if you allow this dog to be become pregnant or impregnate another animal, and if you're not responsible, and if you're not responsible enough to make that decision to spay or neuter, if assuming it's not a purebred, you know, grand champion show dog that we want to procreate and create, you know, great quality, you know, good conformation, great health, great temperament, great longevity, then yeah, we need to spay or neuter. But really, if a shelter or rescue doesn't trust that owner to spay or neuter the dog, you shouldn't be adopting the dog out to that person. Really, if you think that somebody is not going to be responsible enough to spay or neuter a dog, then do they really fit that criteria for like, hey, this is the best adopter in the world? If they're not great, like when I have my Rhodesian Ridgeback puppies. And somebody wants to come buy one of my puppies. I've had people literally, my husband actually threw somebody out. They came from about 8 hours away. And my husband literally threw the guy out of my house physically. He was a big guy and, you know, 6'6" and 270 pounds, police captain. And he just escorted the gentleman out because the man was walking around with shoes on, and we had the little puppies out, and he stepped on one of the puppies, and the puppy screamed and was crying and screaming. And my husband said, "You will leave." He said, "No, I came down for a puppy." And he got very belligerent, and my husband threw him out of my house physically. And guess what? If I don't trust somebody 100% that they're going to spay or neuter that dog, and I give them a pretty good breeder contract that actually gives them punishments for that, if I don't trust that person, they're not getting the dog in the first place. So let's look at the shelters and rescues and say, hey, if we have to spay or neuter these dogs that young, because we don't trust the people who are going to be taking our dogs, and should we really be adopting those dogs to those people? The answer is probably no, right? So let's get past that a little bit. So what are the things that you should do with a young puppy? Because today is a puppy day. It's just one of those puppy days. So what are the things that you can do if you get, instead of an adult dog, that you can do for your puppy? Well, first thing is, don't stop doing all the things I'm going to tell you to do because the dog, oh, it's a year old and it magically is okay. Just imagine you give strong and strict rules to your child, and then when the child is, let's say, 8 or 9 years old, there's no more rules anymore. Now, you may have that perfect, perfect child who isn't going to need more rules, but chances are when they turn into teenagers, they're going to get snotty and bratty and, you know, teenager-ish, and anyone with children knows what that's like. Even a good teenager is not a really typically pleasant thing to be around. So when you do things with a dog, the key is don't stop. You should never stop giving to your dog, teaching your dog, not necessarily training, but teaching your dog the same way that we are all learning as adults, right? You have a great job, and you have this job, and you love it and everything, and, you know, and then all of a sudden there's a new computer system. Don't you have to learn that new computer system? So when you have a dog, and especially if it's a dog, a larger breed, or a dog who, you know, the breed or the combination of breeds in it tend to make it a little bit more energetic or maybe dominant, or if the dog is a little fearful, just don't stop teaching the dog. Keep teaching him so that he always, and this is my phrase that I always say, is set up for success, not for failure. Don't set your dog up for failure. Don't just train him or teach him. Say, oh, we went to a class at the pet store. Well, that's great. That's a good thing. You can build up a relationship with your dog that way. And it's great for younger and older members of the family to be able to feel like, wow, look, the dog has this, you know, dog did the trick that I taught it to do, or whatever. But beyond that, and really important, of course, is to make sure that we don't stop. So if you have a dog, let's say you adopt a puppy or you purchase a dog from a reputable breeder of, you know, champion show dogs who cares and who's going to, you know, be responsible for that dog pretty much for the rest of its life. If you get a great dog and you didn't go to a, you know, pet store, puppy mill, you know, getting perhaps a mixed breed dog that, you know, you think you know what it is, like the one patient I had of the lady, her, the client is a human, the patient is the dog. The patient was a 120-pound dog. She had purchased a lab poodle mix, and then she, well, maybe it was a golden poodle mix. It was a black dog, but I think it might have been a golden poodle mix. And she, you know, got this dog, and it was like 80 pounds. And she said, wow, this dog is just too big. They said he'd be like 60 pounds, and he's like 80 pounds. So I'm going to get a mini whatever poodle mix. And guess how big that one was? That one was like, I think, between 110 and 120 pounds, and it was about a year old when I saw it. So you don't know how the genetics are going to combine. You don't know what the DNA is going to do, because it's like if my husband is 6'6", and I'm 5'3", we could have a 6'6" child. We could have a 5'3" child. We could have a 5-foot child. We could have a 6'8" child. Or we could have something in between. Genetics are funny like that. You see it where you'll say, oh, wow, you know, my son looks exactly like my grandfather. Or my, you know, my daughter looks exactly like my first cousin. Well, that's because genetics don't follow a pattern. Yes, we can be predictive of them, but we don't really have a way. We can't say, oh, I want to, like my husband has beautiful blue eyes and let's say I have brown eyes and I have a really cute pug nose and let's say he has a big honker and we say, I hope my child gets those beautiful blue eyes of my husband and my really cute nose. But you know what you might get? You might get a child with brown eyes or blue, doesn't matter, right? You might get a child with a big nose or a little nose. You could get a child who looks nothing like either of you or looks completely like one of you where you'd need a paternity test. So the whole key really is to just take that dog, make sure you go, if you want something that's you're going to want to predict the size and the temperament and all, get a, you know, purebred from a, you know, AKC breeder of merit, not just somebody who's breeding, you know, mixed breed dogs, because I see a lot of people who say that and they're like, oh, I got this, you know, mini whatever doodle thing. And I have nothing against dogs. I love dogs, but you don't know what you're going to get. It's like, you know, Forrest Gump's mother, right? Sally Field said, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And that's what happens. Now, when you adopt, granted, you don't know either, but there's no expectation typically. When you decide you're going to go rescue, and that's what I love to do, rescue, because you'll get something that looks like nothing else. Every rescue dog seems to look like totally different, right? They don't look the same. They don't also act the same. So now if we're taking a dog who maybe is from a questionable environment, maybe it didn't have all the best of everything. Now, all of a sudden, we're taking that dog and we're taking out all the hormones. We're taking out all of the chemicals that are in the dog's body that would make it more predictable. But particularly if you're neutering or spaying a dog who's fearful, you got to be careful, because sometimes a dog who's got fear issues, when you take out, especially with the males, the testosterone, you're taking out the confidence that it has. And I've seen that with quite a few young dogs who were spayed or neutered early. Now, typically, estrogen will make the dogs calmer, right, like a female. So estrogen will calm the dog, and the testosterone will make him kind of more hyper, you know, more dominant. But you got to look at the growth. So I want you to think about that when you, you know, maybe you're going to talk to somebody or meet somebody and tell them about that. Hey, maybe you don't want to spay or neuter your dog super, super young. Maybe wait until usually about a year. If you do have behavioral issues, then you need to contact one of us at United Canine Pros, 855, the number 4, letter K, the number 9, pros, P-R-O-S. And we have it, that 800 number is manned by one of our behaviorists. You might even get lucky and wind up with talking to me on it, because sometimes it gets patched through if nobody else is there to cover. But what's really cool about that is we can help you, and that's all free. We don't charge for your phone calls. We want to help you. You can also go on the website, United, the letter K, the number 9, UnitedK9Pros.com. And you can also check us out at MerlinsKids.org. Merlin's Kids is the nonprofit, and we rescue dogs from shelters and rescues. We rehabilitate them, train them, and then place them as service dogs for special needs children and for veterans. We've been doing this 30-something years. I can't even believe how long we've been around, but what's great about it is we use mostly rescue dogs, and the rescue dogs that we use, most of them came from kill shelters or from situations where somebody couldn't keep the dog because it had maybe some behavioral issues. You can fix a lot. Obviously, things, you know, dogs that are aggressive, we're not going to, you know, place, you know, even though I can fix that, we're not going to place that dog ever as a service dog, because service dogs have a completely different level of expertise and what they need to do. But it seems like these days, everybody's a dog trainer. Everybody trains service dogs. If you trained a dog to sit and lie down, I'm sorry, that's not a service dog trainer. That's an obedience trainer. That's fine. Be proud of what you are. Don't try to be something you're not. So, you know, I don't run around doing brain surgery because I'm not a brain surgeon. But, you know, if you're a brain surgeon, great. And you have to look at it as, don't pretend you're something that you're not, because you know what's going to happen? You're going to be found out, and you're going to look really stupid. You're going to look really ignorant. And unfortunately, you're probably going to ruin a dog and possibly get somebody in trouble, because somebody might be needing a service dog and they think that the dog that you're training for them is a real service dog, when you really don't know what you're doing. There's a lot of, if you do want to learn what to do, we train people. Merlin's Kids trains people to work with the dogs. Takes a few years to get really good at it. And that's, even so, you're never going to stop learning. I'm still learning, and I've been doing this my whole life. So, you know, we want you to reach out for help, and we love that there's so many people who are really interested in wanting to train service dogs. But do it the right way. Don't do it because, oh, I'm an obedience trainer. Obedience is actually not the way we train at all. It's behavior. You want the dog to be automatic. And a lot of times, if not most of the time, if you try to train a dog to be a service dog and you use obedience and use food and everything, it doesn't transfer over. Because then if you don't have the cookie, the dog doesn't do what you wanted it to do. Think about your kids. Give them, you know, $10 for every A they get on their report card. And then take the $10 away, and you're going to see your kids start dropping a B's, because they're like, well, I'm not getting anything out of it. Why do I want to do it? You want a dog to be autopilot. You want that dog to do everything automatically. You want that dog to be able to kind of do it without thinking about it. Not that it's being bribed to do something, but that it wants to do it, kind of like a parent. You know, think about you, if those of you who have kids. Well, if you're the mom and your three-year-old is sick, and you're sicker than the three-year-old, you're still going to take care of that three-year-old. You're not getting bribed. You're not doing it because you have to. You're doing it because it's just a part of who you are. And a service dog, a real service dog, not a fake service dog, and not somebody who's calling it a service dog and going and buying a vest, or, you know, somebody who's doing like light obedience and you think you're, you know, an expert. You know, you don't want to pretend you're something you're not. Just be honest about it. That's all. You know, if you want to learn how to do it, learn it from somebody who's trained, you know, a couple of hundred service dogs. And, you know, there's also a lot of differences with service dogs of what the temperament is. So if you have a dog and you say, wow, this dog would be the best service dog. He's so calm, really relaxed. Or you say, oh, he's got a lot of energy. He could really keep up with a kid. You got to look at what the dog is going to need to do. Don't look at what you want it to be. Look at what it is destined to be. Kind of like I always used to joke and say, if we were going to take my husband or me and make one of us the gymnast and make one of us a basketball player, you wouldn't probably make me at 5'3" the basketball player and my 6'6" husband as the gymnast, because he would probably, you know, not succeed as a gymnast, and I would probably not succeed as the basketball star because I'm short, okay? So, you know, there are things and there are qualities that each dog has, and that's really the most important part of it, is finding out what that dog is good at, not what you want it to be, but what it is naturally destined to become. This used to happen all the time with my horses, and people would come to me and say, oh, I want to do, you know, something called team penning, which with horses, and you need kind of a shorter, stockier, kind of quicker horse, like a little quarter horse is good at that, or a little polo pony kind of a horse. And I'd have people, well, I want my 17-2 Percheron Thoroughbred to be a, you know, a Gymkhana horse, or I want him to be a, you know, a polo pony. And you're like, you know, the dog or the horse isn't capable of doing that because he's physically not built for it. And it's going to be really hard and he's probably going to get hurt. But people would do it all the time. And I see that with dogs. People, like a lady I was just speaking with a few weeks ago, has her heart set on a Cane Corso puppy. And I said, you know, you have three young children. She says, oh, yeah, but the dog, the breeder said, and of course, breeder in quotes, the breeder said it's going to be great with kids, that the Corsos are great with kids. I said, but even if it's great with your kids, you've got three little kids, you're going to have a friend come over. What happens when that friend comes over and wrestles with your son, and the dog decides that he's hurting your son and he's going to come in and try to grab your son or you know, protect your son? So that's really where a lot of it comes into, you know, into the, you know, into play. And a lot of, you know, what people, I think, do in life is they figure, oh, that won't happen to me. Or, oh, I can fix this. I'm going to train this dog. I trained, you know, my parents' Chihuahua when I was six. Well, you got to look at each dog and each situation as being a unique and different individual. So the fact that you trained one dog or two dogs or five dogs doesn't mean that number six isn't going to stump you. I had this wonderful, wonderful family. They just adopted their seventh greyhound. And I love greyhounds. The greys, they're just wonderful dogs. This dog had won quite a few races, and it was young and just off the track. And they brought it home, and supposedly it has been tested with cats and kids and everything. And the family doesn't have children, but they do have a cat. And this dog was pretty set up on the cat. Now, how could it be cat safe? And, you know, obviously the rescue knows what they're looking at. Well, typically, greyhounds or sighthounds, right? Typically, they are going to be more triggered by things that are moving. So, in other words, a cat that sits still might not be as much of a trigger as a cat that walks around or runs or jumps on things, right? So you have this great dog, and they were about ready to, unfortunately, I think, to, you know, start looking at, you know, other options. And they said, you know, if the dog can't get along with the cat, we can't keep it. The cat has been there for, you know, 8 years or so. And, you know, it's a hard decision, and they love the dog. Well, I went in there and I worked with them, and I really explained, and although they had six other greyhounds, nobody had ever sat down with them. Maybe people don't know, right? But nobody had ever explained to them. I said, well, first of all, when you have a greyhound and the greyhound wins a lot of races, that means it's prey-driven. It's going to tend to be more prey-driven and more visual than if the dog is coming in dead last each time. So you have different parts, like with a racehorse or, you know, with a racing greyhound, there are different things at stake. So if the dog is slow, it's probably going to be kind of kicked out. It's not going to make it. But if, you know, if we say most of the dogs or horses are roughly the same speed, maybe more so with greyhounds being similar, we don't have to look at the breeding. We have to look at the prey drive. So a dog that comes in last every time didn't get to the bunny first, right? But a dog who's won five or six races and is young, chances are that it's got some prey drive to it. So do we get rid of the dog, or do we teach the dog? Do we work with that dog to make sure that the dog understands that the cat is there, or kids or bunnies or whatever else, and that this is a new part of its life and the new job that this animal has? The whole key for us is to make sure that we're still teaching. So they're not going to stop teaching the dog just because, you know, suddenly the dog is, you know, is a little bit, you know, a little bit older, they're going to still keep working on that. And the reason we want to keep working on that is that if we stop working on it, then the dog might become reactive again. So eventually, yeah, the dog will be totally fine. But that's just because we're not going to give it another option not to be fine. Well, think about that. If you look at something, anything in life, college or, you know, a relationship or whatever, and if you say, well, if it doesn't work, I'm going to have to stop or I'm going to have to give it up or whatever, you've already lost. So don't start out and set yourself up for failure. Set yourself up for success. Set yourself up so that you are able to know that, like, okay, I can handle this. I can do this. I got it. But if you're going to start out the wrong way and you're going to start out by, you know, failing before you even start, then don't even start. You see what I'm saying? If you don't think you can do it and you're not willing to try and just do it, chances are pretty good that you are going to fail. So don't make that an option. People always ask me, and I always kind of chuckle. They say, do you like getting bitten by dogs? I'm like, well, I don't like getting bitten by dogs, but I don't care. I mean, I'm okay, because they always say, well, why don't you wear like a police, you know, armed things, you know, the bite suits. I'm like, well, first of all, if I'm going in and I'm assuming the dog is going to bite me, I've already lost. I shouldn't even go in. And we all know there are trainers or people who think they're trainers who will go in and wind up running out, and they're going in with a bite suit. Well, if you're going in with a bite suit, you're already assuming that you're going to lose. Now, unless it's a really, really, really severe dog, and I've done some dogs like that, certainly, but unless it's a really, really severe case of like really bad human aggression, why would you go in assuming you're going to, you know, get bitten? You don't have to have that attitude. If you're not capable or if you're nervous about it, then don't go in. But don't set yourself up for failure. And this brings me back to the puppy situation we started in the beginning. If you assume that that puppy is going to be good and you expect him to be good and you keep guiding him slowly, day by day, little by little, until the dog suddenly one day is, wow, you go, wow, that I didn't realize my dog is perfect. But it doesn't happen overnight. Even the best dog in the world, it's like the best kid in the world, they're still going to hit some snags. They're still going to have some issues. Don't judge. Don't be like negative. You might have a month or two or three or four. I always used to say the first year belongs to the dog and the next 10 years belongs to you. You have to be able to put the time in, not because, you know, you have to, but because you owe it to the dog. Why would you start something thinking that you were going to fail? I hate that when people do that. People say, well, you know, I thought I'd at least try. Well, why? It's like people who make a left turn into oncoming traffic and then, you know, they don't see the blind spot. They don't see and they get whacked and, you know, and get in a bad car accident. And you're like, well, but you couldn't see what was ahead. Why'd you go? That was pretty dumb. Well, it seemed like okay. I couldn't see anything there. Right. Exactly. You didn't see something because you weren't looking. Don't take a stupid chance. It's good to take chances and it's good to have calculated risk, but don't take a chance by saying, well, let's see how this dog is if my kid, you know, if my kid bounces all over, my 3-year-old bounces all over the dog. Hey, look, because I remember there was one stupid video. I wanted to just smack whoever it was. It was a Rottweiler, a big Rottie, and the dog was an angel. But there was this kid, maybe 2 years old, real fat, pudgy kid, and the parents must have, or the father must have been taking the video, or uncle or somebody, and this kid was bouncing on the dog. You could hear the dog's breath where the dog was actually like exhaling, like, huh, like if he got hit in the stomach. And, you know, you could see the dog, and yes, the dog was amazing. But that is teaching two things. It's teaching a little kid to abuse animals, which is dead wrong. And what happens if that Rottweiler, if that kid hurts the dog's back or lung or breaks the dog's rib and the dog flips its head around and nips or bites at the kid? Oh, my God, the dog, this is a terrible dog. We're going to put him to sleep. Why? Because you're stupid? That's the whole point. You want to make sure that when you're taking care of an animal, that you treat the animal with respect, that you're not just doing something to do it, but that there's a purpose to it. That's why a lot of people have, and I was just out with a couple of friends, and they loved my Wyatt's List. And if you want to go on and have a little time, go on to Wyatt's List, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com. And on Wyatt's List, it's got answers to thousands of questions about dogs. And these are not answered by, you know, a 15-year-old in, you know, Utah who decides he's a dog trainer, because God knows who anybody is on the internet. I've seen, you know, police people and police, and there's also, you know, people who are pedophiles and they pretend they're, you know, a 12-year-old girl and try to befriend other 12-year-old girls. And, you know, it's not okay. You don't know who people are on the internet. And with social media, people get up and get behind things, and, you know, you don't know who people are. They have a different profile, and, you know, people are not always good. You know, not everybody in the world is a nice person, and there's a lot of not nice people. Same thing, there are a lot of people out there who really don't, you know, who don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they don't know, but they don't tell you that. And that's where I really believe that people have to be smart. You have to know who people are. You have to know what their energy is telling. Like, do they have good feelings, good vibes, like that you're trying, you know, that they know what to do and that they're trying to help, or are they trying to scam you with something? You don't know who people are. So you have to be careful to make sure that you're making good choices and good decisions for your animals. So go on to Wyatt's List, because we're going to break in a moment, and go on to Wyatt's List, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com, and, you know, join and sign up. You're really going to learn a lot, and you're going to have definitely a peace of mind that you'll know instead of thinking. It's always better to know what you know than to think you know. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. See you in a minute. And welcome back to our second segment, which is From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Still here. Well, I appreciate everybody listening, and I appreciate the fact that there are a lot of other things you could be doing, but hopefully you're learning something, and hopefully you'll take that knowledge that you're garnering with me, and you'll send that off to other people. You'll help people, teach people not to go to pet stores, not to go to these, you know, places that are making these designer dogs, that they're living a lot of them in really bad situations, and the mothers might have 8 or 10 litters in a lifetime, which is horrible, and they don't have the greatest lives. So, you know, educate people. Let people know. Don't just keep the information to yourself. Let them know what's good to do and what's bad to do. And try to, you know, give them our 800 number for United Canine Pros, 855-449-9288. And also tell them about Merlin's Kids, because Merlin's Kids, which is what this segment is about, is our organization, our 501c3, that finds dogs in shelters and rescues. And sometimes I take some of my Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgeback puppies, and I give them to Merlin's Kids so that we can train some of them as service dogs, because they're pretty amazing as service dogs. They're great with children, and they're incredibly smart, and they're great size and short hair and very low shedding. So, you know, you can teach people. But let's talk a little bit about what do you do when you want to get a dog and maybe train it to be a service dog for you. Now, there's two different kinds of service dogs, and there's actually a lot, but we're going to break it down right now for two different kinds of dogs. And if you have the best dog in the world, but the dog really isn't very well behaved, or the dog is nervous outside, or it's not great with other dogs, and if you want that dog to be able to do public access and go out into public, yes, we can teach the dog, we can train you and train the dog, but maybe that's not the thing for that particular dog. So there's the public access, because that's a hard one, because you're always going to be fighting the dog's natural urges. But the second kind of dog, and I deal with, you know, a fair number of people who say, well, you know, I really don't need the dog to go out in public. I need the dog more in my house because, you know, it's when I get home from work and I'm stressed, or, you know, I've got some other health issue that, let's say, mobility issue, because when you're out, maybe you're in a wheelchair or you have a walker or you're sitting in an office. Maybe your back doesn't hurt, but maybe you have a problem. Maybe you live alone and you need help getting up if you fall, or you need help retrieving an object because nobody's around. So those kind of situations, you can definitely use a dog who's really intelligent, very bonded to you, but maybe doesn't have that perfect temperament to be outside and to be out with other people and other dogs. Maybe then the key is to find the tasks that you're going to need to teach that dog. What tasks would you need? So let's say for a minute that you need a service dog and you need a dog to help you. Maybe you're diabetic, or, you know, you have another issue. Maybe you have vertigo and you can manage it during the day because you're with people or you're sitting at a desk or whatever, but you need tasks done, but you only really need them at home. Well, then temperament wise, obviously you don't want an aggressive dog, but if the dog is a little fearful, or if the dog is, more difficult in one way, shape, or form, because it's, let's say, it doesn't like kids or whatever. If the dog is in your house, that doesn't matter really, does it? If the dog is not great because you have a fenced yard, you're taking your dog out and able to walk them and get them past those situations. But in that case, and you don't need that dog to be a full service dog, literally, going out and, you know, working with you out in general public and the public access, then that dog that you say, oh, you know, he's the best dog in the world and he's really able to help me. Well, if the dog doesn't need to go out and he's not good at public access, it doesn't much matter. But most of the time, because if you have that dog, and let's say you have a very overprotective dog, he might be the best dog in the world for you in your home. But if you need a dog who's got to go out, and most people, you know, if your diabetes doesn't typically only act up or flare up at home, it probably flares up outside as well. So when you need that dog who's got to pass public access exposure, and we do a lot at Merlin's Kids, we do so much. A lot of our training is public access. So we skill or task train the dog first. Now, most places that are reputable, or some that aren't reputable, what they say is, oh, we're going to get you a puppy and, you know, we're going to train the puppy and then, you know, we'll train it to do things after it's got the public access. Well, my feeling has always been, if the dog doesn't have the ability to do the tasks, then why are we going to bother with everything else, right? We want to make sure that that dog has the capability of doing those tasks that you're going to need. So we actually task train the dogs first. Then we do a lot of public access simultaneously. And then after the initial public access and all the training, which is typically between 1,000 and 2,000 hours of training, takes between a year and a half and 2 years, sometimes even a little more. Then we put the dogs into 3 to 6 months of public access exposure at different universities around the country. So somebody listening might have a freshman or a sophomore or even a junior who loves dogs and wants to get involved in puppy raising. Well, you don't get a puppy with us you get a fully trained service dog, and then we train you what to do and basically not ruining the dog. But it's kind of like a step-down unit. It's kind of cool. So you get that dog who has all the task training, knows everything, and already has been out and has hundreds of public access hours. But then the kids are able to, with, you know, lots of training and weekly sessions, they're actually able to continue taking the dogs out and helping, you know, helping by getting more more exposure into different situations, such as, you know, maybe flying on planes or going on the train or colleges. A lot of them have campus buses. And it gets the dogs used to also being in real classrooms and going to movies and going to concerts, which we do all of that stuff. It's, you know, it's definitely a lot of fun to do all those things, and it's very rewarding. So if you're interested, you can email merlinskids.servicedogs, with an S, merlinskids.servicedogs@gmail.com, and they'll give you the information on how to get involved and how to start the University Partners Program. But the key is, if you have a dog who's going to be out in public, you don't want to force the dog into situations. I do look at it, and yes, I can fix almost anything, literally almost any dog. And I mean almost, maybe there are 5 dogs out of 35,000 dogs I've rehabilitated and worked with that I couldn't fix because the genetics were so bad. And, you know, that happens. You know, there's some dogs that just, you know, they're never going to be trustworthy, or they're just so broken, and it's just horrible, but they're just so broken. And sometimes, you know, unfortunately, I think euthanasia is probably the kindest thing, even though we all don't want to think about that. But another part of that is, don't you want your dog to enjoy being with you and being out where your dog is going to be able to, you know, kind of be social? And I don't mean, you know, going up to strangers and all, but you want your dog to enjoy what you're doing, right? It's kind of like if you've ever had a friend and the friend is like, well, I want to go and I want to go to this movie. And you're like, oh, I really wanted to, you know, go shopping. Well, we're going to go to the movie because I want to. You know, those kind of bossy people that are out there, or kind of those people that they're toxic friends. Everything's got to be their way, right? Well, it's not fun to go do something you really don't enjoy. And I think it's only fair for these incredible dogs that are giving their lives and their, you know, their strength and their time. Let's make sure those dogs want to be doing that job. You see what I'm saying? It's not just can the dog do it, but you want a dog who, first of all, wants to be with you or wants to be with his person and enjoys being out there. You don't want to take a dog who's frightened of everything or who's super dominant or aggressive, and it's a constant work. I want to go, you know, let's say I want to go see an ice skating exhibition. I don't want to go with somebody who's going to hate it. It's like, ladies, what do we do to our spouses, right? Typically, most men don't like to shop. And what do? We drag them off to the store. Well, why do you want to drag them off to the store? Go with your girlfriend. Go with somebody who wants to go with you. And then you both have fun. You both enjoy the time. I get really frustrated when I see people trying to, like, I'll never forget it. I was with Savannah at one of the cancer detection. It's a big thing we go to every year. And we do, 2,000 to 3,000 cancer screenings. And there was a woman there with a little golden mix, very cute dog, almost looked like a Nova Scotia duck tolling retriever mixed with a golden, really cute dog. The dog was growling at Savannah. And it was backing itself against the building. And I kept thinking that, like, geez, this dog looks like it hates just doing this job. And the woman actually was, because I was standing with my friend Cindy, and the woman was just like, can you please move already? Can you? And I was like, excuse me? She said, well, my service dog doesn't like other dogs. And I just kind of looked back at her and I said, then that's your service dog isn't trained properly. She's like, oh, my dog is trained fine. Your dog is scaring my dog. I said, my dog isn't looking at your dog. I mean, Savannah is like, she ignores everything. She couldn't care less. She had a 90-pound male pit bull attached to her that hit her in the jugular that was trying to kill her, and she stood there. So I know my dog isn't doing anything. But it was this woman who was so angry. And I said to her, I said, why don't you just train your dog better then? And I was very nice about it. I told her what I do. She's like, she's trained fine. You just need to move with your dog. Like, oh, my God. That is, yeah, you could see the woman was scared because she knew her dog obviously wasn't behaved. And she knew her dog wasn't a real legit service dog. So she's blaming us. Well, I mean, we should be able to stand there. We were 25 feet away. We weren't looking at her. We were standing waiting for a ride. And, you know, it's just, it was one of those things that I remember because that woman could have easily said, yeah, I would like help. But she didn't want any help because she didn't want to admit or acknowledge that her dog had some serious behavioral issues. So you take somebody like that, who doesn't acknowledge that there's a problem, you're not helping your dog. You're only helping your dog if you are able to admit what your dog needs and if you're able to actually give that dog a job that it's capable of. That little dog was, I mean, she was adorable, but that little dog might be absolutely amazing for that woman in her home, in her little fenced yard. And that dog could do probably, I don't know, I didn't see it do any tasks, but that doesn't mean anything. But for that dog to be going out and that reactive to a dog who's ignoring her and has her back to the dog, that woman was so stressed, but imagine what she was doing to the dog, what that dog was feeling of her energy, right? So maybe that dog would have been okay at home. And that's what I'm trying to get through to everybody. We've all seen fake service dogs. I estimate somewhere in the 90% of dogs that are out there that have service dog vests are fake. And I'd say easily 80 to 90%. And I don't think anyone would disagree with me. A service dog, a real service dog, doesn't growl or snarl or bark. A real service dog doesn't lift its leg on, you know, a display or on another person. A real service dog doesn't mess up and do things like running or jumping at other people. A real service dog isn't aggressive. A real service dog, you shouldn't even know it's there. And that's what I always love when I'm at a restaurant with one of our Merlin's kids dogs or one of my private dogs, and we're sitting there for a while, and then we suddenly, you know, get up to leave. And people are like, oh, my God, I didn't know there was a dog there. And you hear, oh, honey, look, there's a dog. And then the kids get down, look, there's a dog there the whole time. That's what a service dog should be. When I fly with my guys, I love it because, well, I mean, you're always a target, which kind of is tough when you don't want to be noticed and you can't not be noticed. But what happens is that when you go out into those situations, you're representing a bunch of other people and dogs. So if you want to, you know, bring your dog who's not well behaved, don't bring them into places where only a service dog is allowed, because it's going to reflect badly on other people. People will say, oh, well, I saw a dog with a service dog vest and it wasn't a real service dog. It was terrible. So that must be a fake one too. And that's where we really want to make sure that, and help people, right? We want to make sure that, you know, the people who are, you know, going to be, you know, representing other service dogs, that you're going to do a good job at it. And you should want to learn. So we do actually train people to not only train their own dogs to be service dogs, but also those of you who want to train a dog to be service dog for somebody else, and that would be through Merlin's Kids. So you can call 1-855-HI-WYATT, 1-855-HI-WYATT. And you can also look at it and say, well, gee, you know, I know someone who needs a service dog. You can help get us, you can even volunteer and start helping out and help us, you know, educating people and even helping to fundraise, because, you know, we place these dogs, and these dogs are cost us a lot of money. It's very expensive to train a dog properly. And that's why when you see somebody who says, oh, I'm going to train your dog to be a service dog for like $2,000 or $5,000, there's no way, unless you're not doing it right, that it's going to cost that little. It's just, even I understand how people can lie about that stuff, because it's so serious. And I deal with, you know, people all day long who, some people, you know, really need a service dog and they can't afford it, and we subsidize them. And some people say, hey, you know what? I really need a service dog for my child, but I don't want to take from somebody who can't afford it. We get all kinds of great people. But what I do always let everybody know is, listen, you know, these dogs take a long time. It's not like, you know, you can say, oh, we're going to train the service dog for you in 3 months. There's no way you can adequately train a dog in 3 months. Or like the one place was doing, they were scamming people. They were taking $5,000 from veterans, and they were going to the shelter and taking a service vest, putting the service vest onto the dog and saying it was a service dog. And they would take maybe 2 weeks, and they would just stick the vest on it, and they would teach it to sit and lie down, and they said it was a service dog. And guess what? Those dogs would start, maybe some would bite. Some of them were scared. One of them actually ran away from the family. And, you know, you look at it and you say, well, you know, why can't people just be legit? Why can't people be upfront? Well, not everybody is, you know, and that's where we try to help people. So, you know, maybe you might want to learn how to do this and how to train service dogs or be a behaviorist. All kinds of wonderful things that you guys can do. The key is to make sure that you're doing it right, you're doing it fairly, and you're doing your best at it, and that you have professional help from, not from a trainer, but from someone who has done this hundreds of times before to teach you the expertise that you're going to need. And I want to just go through, remember again, if you need us, 855-449-9288 for United Canine Pros. We'll give you free help by phone. And if you really need help, we can come to your home, or you can come to one of our training facilities around the country. And if you need help, or if you or someone else have, need for a service dog, you can call Merlin's Kids, which is 855-HI-WYATT. And, you know, you'll have a lot of fun just learning about that. And you can go on to, a lot of different situations, and there are a lot of different options for you. But also, you know, just tell people, educate people, let people know that there is help out there. Let people know what's right. Let people know what's not right. And make sure that no matter what you do, you give it your all. Rescue, don't buy, unless you're going to a really good show breeder. Rescue, rescue, rescue. You'll save a life, you'll feel good, and you'll save thousands of dollars that you didn't have to spend, and you can do a lot better things. Go on a family vacation and get the best dog in the world that you're saving its life. Well, unfortunately, it's an hour already. I can't believe how quickly time flies, but have a wonderful week. This week is Thanksgiving. Make sure you don't give your dog too much turkey. Be very careful. We just had a dog die from grapes, not my personal dog, but a dog very close to me that the grandchild had fed the dog grapes, we believe. Grapes can be toxic, raisins, super toxic. Don't let your dog have stuffing if it has raisins in it. Be really careful around Thanksgiving. Don't give your dog, you know, bones that have been cooked. Go through and make sure that your dog is only eating what he's supposed to. And if you don't have guests who are able to help out and not give dogs what they shouldn't have, then either put your dog away, or if you can't put your dog away, then don't invite those people over. Your dog needs to survive Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourselves. Have a wonderful, healthy,
happy Thanksgiving, and just take care of your babies. Have a great night. See you next week.